And of course, the other irony is that it was in the temple that the high priest paid Judas 30 pieces of silver, and that's famous occurrence, I suppose, going down in history. You know, 30 pieces of silver is associated with someone being a traitor now.
Okay.
Let's head.
So we'll head now into the Rankin Church, and inside we're going to find some depiction of the fact that Jesus turned the tables over, and as Angus has said, something to do with the idea of betrayal. Various people from various churches have contributed to the display that's on here, but there's time to take a quiet moment to reflect, if you like, on what happened within the temple.
Rushing wind blow through this temple, blowing out the dust within. Come and breathe your breath upon me, I've been born again. Holy Spirit, I surrender, take me.
Right, Murray, so we're leaving the Rankin Church now, where we found out about the temple, and we're crossing Lethem Road to go to the Evangelical Church, and there we're going to think about the upper room at site number 4. And tensions are rising and things are getting a bit serious now.
Yeah, this is the Thursday of the week, so Jesus has been in Jerusalem since the weekend, and it's Passover time, and Passover was a very, very important feast for the Jews. You know, we gather at Christmas time, families get together, and it was a really important time for us to do that. But this, I suppose, is a bit like this, the Passover meal. The Jews were remembering a time that they had been saved from slavery 1,000 years earlier. And therefore, to celebrate the Passover was really important. And Jesus arranged for his 12 disciples to meet together in a room called the Upper Room. It was somewhere that was quite quiet, and they could be alone together. But this was different. This was a Passover meal, and they'd obviously had Passover meals as a family or with their own families many times before. But Jesus was very somber, and he began to tell them some really quite scary and significant things that were going to happen in the next 24 hours, really.
Now, in the upper room, of course, The other famous phrase associated with that is the Last Supper, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Where Jesus gathered his disciples together, as you described there. And what happened there during the Last Supper?
Well, in the Last Supper, you might have seen the painting by Leonardo da Vinci. It's very, very famous.
I haven't seen the original, but I've seen pictures of it on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I think everybody has. It's in Milan.
Yeah, it's big, isn't it? It's about 29 feet.
Yeah, huge. Yeah, massive. Very, very famous picture, but it's just... It shows Jesus and his disciples sharing this meal together. Now, it wouldn't quite be as he's depicted it, because obviously they were...
all on one side of the table.
Yes, and it would be very different in the upper room. But nevertheless, Jesus took some time to share both wine and bread with them as part of the other things that they were eating. And in the Evangelical Church and the tour, I know that they've decided to try and have some of the things available that they would have had at the Last Supper. But Jesus took these to make a symbol. He said, "This wine is my blood." And they really didn't know what he was talking about until later, when it became very evident to them. And they also said, "This bread is my body broken for you." And again, it's something very symbolic. And as Christians, we understand now what he meant, because a few hours later, he was going to be on the cross giving his blood and his body. And he was showing them that this is something in everyday life, everyday eating, that they could remember the sacrifice that he was making. But it's very important, and he had other things to say to them too, of course.
And it is remarkable, and it is fantastic that 2,000 years on we still remember that and mark that as an occasion regularly, isn't it, in our churches.
But Jesus did something very special during the Last Supper. He went round and washed his disciples' feet. Now, we talked earlier on this tour about how people's feet got very dirty. I mean, the sheep gate was all very muddy and mucky. But
it's something we don't do in our culture, is it? Like, when you come round to my house, I don't wash your feet.
You haven't offered.
No, dead right.
Anyhow, the washing of the feet was a very menial task, and it's something that a servant would have done, but Jesus went round and he washed his disciples' feet. And Peter, one of the disciples, said, "You're not washing my feet. Come on, leave me alone."
You think he was embarrassed?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you're not doing that to me. But Jesus said no. He was giving them a sign of the fact that they should be servants and serve each other. And again, as Christians, we understand what that means. And I hope that when we go into the upper room just now, we can really reflect on that, that Jesus came, although he was God's son, he came to serve. And that should encourage us to do it.
Well, I think as we go in here, we're probably becoming a bit more reflective in this part of the tour. So I'm looking forward to getting here and seeing what we find.
Okay.
Okay, let's go.
God of justice, Saviour to all, came to rescue the weak and the poor, chose to serve and that be served. Jesus, you have called.
As Angus said, we're now going to leave the upper room and make our way across to the Allison Green, right in the heart of Strathaven. Now, Jesus left the Last Supper and he made his way there, and we must now try and imagine what he was feeling. He'd washed his disciples' feet, he'd told one of them that he would betray him. He had also said that the rest would run away, that he was feeling now quite distressed. And as we come to the garden, we want to try and imagine and try and understand what it was like for Jesus. So the Garden of Gethsemane itself was a public place full of olive trees, and Jesus had a habit of going there when he wanted to pray or to be alone. And that's exactly why he went on this night. He went to be quiet, and the Bible tells us that he went in. He asked his disciples, he asked some of them to wait, and then he took his three closer friends with him a little bit further, deeper into the garden. And he asked them to stay and wait and watch, because he was obviously distressed that he was going to be arrested. He knew what lay ahead, but they couldn't stay awake. And Angus is now going to read for us a little bit about what Jesus experienced there.
The disciples went with him, and when they arrived at the place, Jesus said, "Pray that you don't give in to temptation." Then Jesus pulled away from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, "Father, remove this cup from me. But please, not what I want. What do you want?" And at once an angel from heaven was at his side strengthening him. And he prayed on all the harder, sweat wrung from him like drops of blood pouring off his face. He got up from prayer, And he went back to the disciples and he found them asleep, drugged by grief. And he said, what business do you have sleeping? Get up, pray, so you won't give in to temptation. And then, of course, things changed after that and the crowd appeared. And
yes, the Bible tells us that Judas Iscariot, who Jesus knew would betray him, came into the garden. It was dark and he went over to Jesus and to indicate which of the men in this dark garden was Jesus, he kissed him in the cheek. And at that point, the temple guards arrested him and there was a bit of a scuffle and Jesus was marched away under guard and the disciples fled.
Yep, and Jesus' famous words to Judas, Judas, would you betray me with a kiss? And a sort of act of what should have been friendship and becoming an act of turning Jesus over or handing him over.
Now, as you go into the Garden of Gethsemane, I set out, there are three areas. There's an area where you come into the garden and this is where the bulk of the disciples waited, and then where Jesus took the three a little bit further on, there's another area to reflect and be quiet, and then it's set out so that you can sit, if you wish, in an area to remind you of what Jesus experienced. And that phrase you read, Angus, that the sweat was wrung from him like drops of blood, just tells us, I think, how much he was distressed.
So distressed that words can hardly describe it, I think.
So now as the drama moves on, I think we should go over and see what happened next.
Okay, let's head.
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever-wandering heart? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling, Lord, you catch me when I'm falling. Watch me rise again. Who am I that the voice that calmed the sea would call out through the rain and calm the storm in me? Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling, Lord, you catch me when I'm falling.
Leave the Garden of Gethsemane now and go up to the High Priest's Courtyard. Now, we're going to find that up in Thompson Street, aren't we? And that's at the West Kirk. And is it a secret entrance or something into... how are we going to find it if it's a secret entrance?
We'll go there and find out. The West Kirk have a marvellous garden at the back of their church, Angus. There's a door halfway along the wall, and there will be a sign that says that you can get in. And that's where we're going now.
And it's surrounded by buildings, so it's just a bit like what the high priest courtyard would have been.
Exactly. It's closed in. It's a quiet place, and yet, as I think we'll find out just now, it's a really dramatic place to be.
Uh-huh. And what sort of things happened in the high priest courtyard? What would we have found if we'd been there?
Well, I think we have to remember that this actually is the middle of the night, and what happened was Jesus was brought there by these armed guards. He was taken in, and they had a court set up so that they could try him. Now, who ever heard of anyone being tried in the middle of the night?
And also being tried by the high priest as well.
Yeah, it's not very legal, and I think that's quite important to remember. But nevertheless, Jesus was tried, and they managed to trump up a charge that meant that he should die, and that was blasphemy. They felt that he claimed to be God and that he should die for that.
Right. Now, it must have been pretty intimidating, a crowd of hostile people, high priest courtyard. But Peter was brave enough to follow him there, wasn't he? Which
yes.
is quite remarkable.
We often think of Peter letting Jesus down, but in
yes.
fact, he went right to this place. He entered a place where there was certainly people around, and he warmed himself beside a fire. So there was, guards or people there, and he was there trying to see what was going on.
Now, it was at the fire that he was challenged, wasn't he, by a lady there, and she said... Well, she asked him who he was and alleged where he'd been and who he'd been with. And
yeah, probably his accent. He was from the north, and they mm-hmm. probably thought, you're a Galilean.
Uh-huh.
You were with him, or maybe she'd seen him. But nevertheless, Peter said, no, I don't know him at all.
Uh-huh.
And later on, he was challenged another two times, and
uh-huh.
and he said, no. In fact, he swore and said, I definitely don't mm-hmm. know the man.
Mm-hmm.
So, Angus, why don't you read us that part from Mark about Peter denying Jesus?